Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. This channel, Trauma and Social Change, it's absolutely the moment for that, isn't it? I'm Steve Hoskinson. I'm the founder of Organic Intelligence. I've been teaching in this area of trauma, embodiment, and social change for about 25 years. It's an honor, really, for us to be sponsoring this channel where we're going to hear a multiplicity of voice, all unique contributors to our collective understanding of how to move from trauma and support then social change. Our unique voice in organic intelligence has something to do with a koan that I'd like to present to you, which is trauma means unintegrated resource. And that's a koan, and if you'd like and are feeling intrigued about that riddle, then tune in to the post-trauma system development course that we are offering here. The coupon code that'll get you half off on that is ENJOY. Now, enjoy this next presentation, and we'll look forward to another meaningful time as we explore these topics, trauma and social change. Enjoy.
Christine Isherwood, who is a registered voice movement therapist and international trainer with over 35 years of experience of working with people. And she's also known as the founder of the first voice movement therapy training program in Beijing, China. So Christine will present us her session called Giving Voice to the Body's Tale, How the Voice Can Help Express, Shape, and Transform Our Wounds. Here it goes to you, Christine. Oh, and you're muted right now. Please unmute yourself.
That's a great way to start a webinar on voice, isn't it? Being on mute, actually, it's a great analogy as to what I'm talking about, what I'm going to be talking about. So good morning, everybody, or good evening, wherever you are. I'm Christine Isherwood. I'm a voice movement therapist, which is a discipline that I've been doing for quite a long time now. I teach the training in voice movement therapy as well, teach people how to become practitioners of voice movement therapy. And it's a fantastic body of work. So today, what I'm planning on doing is to talk, first of all, a little bit about the voice, because, it's important. There's a lot to say. I could talk for an entire week and still not have covered everything. So I'm literally going to be dipping into some things. And then I thought we might take a few minutes and do some breath and some voice and movement thing, which is always an interesting thing, doing it in a separated thing like a computer screen. So, and then I'd like to talk a little bit about developmental voice, about the trauma, where this work originated, which actually originated in the work of trauma, and then specifically about how we work in voice movement therapy. We are going to make some time to take some questions later. So if you've got questions, send your questions in. So, as I said, good morning. So voice is a really interesting thing. You know, we are often identified by our voice. You know, people recognize us by our voice. And in the olden days, before we all had the telephones that told us who was calling, then, you know, you used to be able to you'd pick up the phone, and before somebody said, hello, this is my name, you would recognize, if you knew them, you would recognize who they were. They didn't have to say, oh, do you remember, I've known you for 38 years, etc. You would know who they were because you recognized their voice. And so voice is intrinsically linked to our identity as to who we are. And we often know or have some understanding of how people are feeling by what we hear in their voice. Even if you only say hello, for example, we may go, oh, but what's wrong? Because we hear it in the tone of that one word. Or we may go, oh wow, what's happened to you? And so we're conveying a lot through voice. It's not only in the words that we speak, it's also that which is carried in the voice. Which we are reading all the time. So voice is so interesting because it's our identity at the same time, and at the same it's our identity, and at the same time, it's also not just us, because it's shaped by so many other factors. you know, every human baby, when they are born and exploring themselves in voice, they have this wide palette of voice which they use. And then as they attune themselves to their environment, then they understand that certain sounds are not welcome within their environment. You know, if they're growing up in a multilingualistic household, then that's great because they are able to keep many more of the sounds that they use. But we learn that we have to edit out parts of the palette, parts of the sound palette that we've been using, because there isn't space for them in the environment in which we grow up. And that relates to sounds. That also relates to emotional states as well. So certain aspects of oneself may not be welcomed in the environment in which we grow up. And so we pretty soon learn to edit those out because when they're not welcome, they don't get a response. So it's... And voice continues to be shaped by all the factors around us. It's shaped by the family, first of all, or the environment in which we grew up, society, culture, education, the linguistic mores which surround us. And so we learn to adapt ourselves vocally. We learn to adapt ourselves linguistically and vocally to fit in. And so our voice is our identity. Our voice identifies us. Yet at the same time, there's also a lack in what is represented as us. Now, voice is one of the first things that we do. You know, we are born and then we cry. We make a cry. And of course, there's a physiological reason for that, because it's to clear the mucus from the lungs. But also, it's like one of the first things that we do. So it's like the way we announce ourselves into the world. We come into the world and, ha, there's a cry. And then that's the medium that we have for quite a period of time. We haven't yet, you know, we're not yet able to get up on our legs and go to the cupboard and help ourselves to food. You know, we have to use our voice to make our needs and wants known. And so that's what we do. And that could be, you know, basic survival things like change my nappy, change my diaper, feed me, or, you know, pick me up for God's sake. You know, I need, because the first trauma basically is basically positive. That's the removal, the moving from the womb to the outside world. So you move from this 360 degrees of dark liquid, which has contained you for 9 months or so, in which you have moved and danced. You have not sounded yourself because you don't have the ability to sound yourself in the womb, but you have been moving and dancing and exploring yourself in movement. And then you come through this, through a birth channel or up through the belly, and you're suddenly in this new environment. So it has been referred to as the first trauma. So though you have a relationship with the first trauma, and then what comes in, the voice comes in. And so we use voice as babies to declare ourselves, to get our needs met, to get attention, to command attention if we are able to. And we pretty soon learn whether we're going to get our needs met, whether we will be attended to, whether somebody will arrive. And so voice is multifaceted. And so the baby sounds itself. If it's lucky, somebody appears, picks it up, holds it, maybe sounds with it. I mean, that's the optimum growth attachment dynamic that, you know, the baby sounds and then there is a relational duet which occurs, that somebody sounds back to you, somebody echoes back to you the sounds that you have made, somebody gives you back, and then there's a song which occurs. And for a lot of babies, that doesn't happen. For a lot of babies, that doesn't happen. They might sound, and, you know, it used to be the advice back in the 50s, like, you know, let the baby cry and it's good for its lungs and all that sort of stuff. It's not. It doesn't need to practice. Babies can use their voice for hours on end without needing to practice, their lung capacity, and they have full breath flowing, which allows their voice to flow. And it allows their voice to flow for hours on end, as many people will know, to their distress, you know, like, oh, the baby's crying. How can I stop the baby crying? And the baby keeps on crying. And then they don't get a sore throat. You know, if us a lot, when we're adults, we go, oh my God, you know, I was at the disco last night. That's in the olden days before COVID. I was at the disco last night and I was singing to all the songs and I was talking too loud. Oh, now my throat, and I can't really talk today. I've lost my voice, because we no longer have the connection. We no longer have the embodied voice. We have kind of a disconnection with it. But that's not so with babies. And one of the things that babies do is they pretty soon, they use their voice to command attention. And then they also use that voice to self-soothe. So the voice is going out and then it comes back in to self-soothe. So it becomes, it has a dual purpose, if you like. It's to get and receive attention, and then it also is there to nurture. There was some research done in the early 70s, Abraham and Torok, and they said that babies first of all voiced to express the hunger, and then they voiced to replace the hunger. And I thought that was so beautiful, that that, you know, we learned that actually that which we are looking for on the outside, we can provide some of that for ourselves through the voice. Let's take a moment now and come into voice, come into breath. I don't know who's here, how many people are here, but so perhaps place a hand on your heart and your belly. And take a breath. You can tune inwards. Filling up the inside with breath. And then when you feel you have some breath, I'm going to ask you to bring your arms out from your heart with a sigh, and then bring them back into the heart. So, see, this is the point where I would really love you to have your microphones on. And just let some of that go in a sigh. And let there be sound come on your side. Nobody can hear you. Ah. And let there be movement through your ribs and through your torso so that your torso comes forward and then goes back so that your ribs start to open. And let the sound, if it's a sigh, if it's already a sound, let the sound become a ha or ah. So, ah. 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 And you're lifting your upper torso, you're lifting the rib cage, and you're lifting the lungs behind the rib cage. You're lifting the heart. Ah, and then bring it back. Ah. And take, if you will, take the sound just for one moment. Take it 1 minute. Take it into your body. Ah, so let the rib cage be open. Let the rib cage and the lungs and the heart move. Ah, and let the sound play. Let the sound come and just play. Ah, ah, ah. And if you have sounded, you may want to carry on sounding, or you may want to close your eyes for a moment and feel into the sound. Once your eyes are closed, feel the breath and the sound inside as it starts to open the inside of you, because this sound is coming from the inside of you. Okay. There are many, many sounds that the voice can make. And as I said earlier, as babies, we used to sound ourselves, and we use so many different expressions of sound, so many different palettes, so many interesting sounds. Don't forget the interesting sounds. You know, voice does not just have to be beautiful. You know, we also, if we're going to ever be whole, we also need all the really interesting sounds in us, and all the aspects of the voice perhaps considered not beautiful. And of course, that differs from culture to culture. And so babies sound themselves really freely. They also sound themselves with a really free laryngeal space, you know. And when we start to acquire language, then one of the things that we do is we start to narrow ourselves, you know. We start to fall into the drama of getting things right, again, I said editing things out, editing sounds out, and we also learn to please. So, well, that's not a very nice sound, is it? Whatever do you mean by that? Now, why don't you say it nicely? Ask for that nicely, like a good girl. So we learn all sorts of things. But so with language, with the acquisition of language, we start to let go of lots of areas of the voice. I'm doing that with my hand. I've just seen myself on camera. We start to let go of lots of areas of the voice. And concurrent with that letting go of those areas of the voice, those parts of the voice, is also a letting go of those parts of the self. Because in essence, what we're doing is we're taking away the voice from those parts of the self that have been sounding. So they then start to fall into the shadow, into unsounded bits. Now, many of us have great judgments about our voices. We say, oh, no, I've not got a nice voice. I'm not a classically trained singer. I don't know how to do that. My voice isn't good. Oh, no, I don't like my voice. And, it's the way it is. But how can we claim parts of our voice without always judging ourselves so harshly? I don't know if any of you have ever sung, for example, with other people, and you go, oh, I got it wrong. Or we start off singing and we're so fearful of getting it wrong that we already have tensed up so many muscles in the body, because like, okay, I've got to get this right. I've got to get it perfect. And then we're creating all this stress on the voice. So we're no longer allowing ourselves to be in free flow with what might want to emerge. So one of the ways that we work in this field of voice movement therapy is that we seek to enable people to reclaim all the parts of themselves through voice. And that means we obviously have to do a lot of work with our critics, because the critics love to come in and go, and they have their stories to tell as well. You know, they have their voices, which perhaps sometimes it may be appropriate to listen to, but actually most of the time it's not. So we have to deal with those voices making themselves heard. So we really seek to reclaim ourselves through voice. That involves, first of all, coming into the body. Voice movement therapy is, first of all, an embodied voice discipline. And that's what we've been calling it for many years. The voice is sited in the body. The body is a necessary part of the body. We need the breath. Breath is the undercurrent of voice. Voice, it resides. Voice is carried on breath. So we need access to the breath. And we also need access to the possibilities. I'm sure you have all seen, or perhaps had the experience of yourself sometimes, where your head seems cut off from your body and you're talking only from the head and there's no relationship whatsoever to the body, and you're disenfranchised in a sense from the possibility of what you can do. So we work with breath. Just before we did that tiny bit of voice and movement, I said, take a breath, because one of the things that happens with breath, breath animates the body. It also animates voice and psyche. So when we start to breathe, then we are taking the breath into the areas of our insides. And we're also taking the breath into the voice. We're also taking the breath into the psyche and images. When we take, I love it in the English language, to breathe is also to inspire. And indeed it's so, it's like let's have some inspiration, let's take a breath. And indeed, there's far greater possibility for inspiration when we have taken a breath. So with breathing, then the inner world starts to come to life. With voicing, that's also so. The inner world of feelings, sensations, images, old feelings, which perhaps we may have tried to subdue, start to move. And so the place where stories have been stored have been become impacted by breath and by voice. Voice forms connections inside. It also brings us to new places within ourselves, really new places. I wish we were in a room together and we could really descend down into the body and voice and feel the wonder as the voice starts to lead. You know, and voice is new every single time. Voice is new every single time. So this voice only exists in this moment. You know, the voice isn't an organ. It's not like the heart or the liver or the kidneys or the lungs, whatever. The voice, it's an imaginal thing almost. It's shaped by the resonating chambers of the body, by the structure of the face, the lips, the teeth, the tongue, the mouth. It's shaped also by the areas I spoke of earlier, by our histories. It's also shaped by the stories which have happened to us. But nowhere does it exist before this moment in which it's existing. And so we have choices to make ourselves anew constantly through voice and through the voice that comes out. And if we let it, if we come into the body, if we come into the body and the breath, and instead of imposing our will upon the voice, imposing cognition upon the voice, imposing what we think we want to hear upon the voice, what we think should come out, if we allow the voice its own time, its own space, then the voice starts to come. And if we dare to, we can listen to the tales that the voice brings out. We can listen to what occurs once we have let go of. I want it to be pretty and sound really beautiful and have people go, oh, what a lovely voice. Or you probably wouldn't think, what a lovely voice from that. But, you know, if we let go of determining what it sounds like and let the wisdom of the body bring the sounds out, then we hear so much. We not only come into contact with so much more of who we are, we come into contact with what Carl Jung called the unconscious, you know, that which is beyond our layer of knowing, that which is beyond what we know with our consciousness. I'm aware I'm moving from different things. I always think of this work. We have a very important part of this work called the sphere, where we really explore the sphericalness of sound and the human movement. And I always feel that this work is spherical, that it weaves in and out of each other in so many different ways. There's so many different places that it can go to. So the contents of the unconscious, that considered unknowable, really, can be approached through voice. And so we can use voice to embody and give voice to aspects of the self, some of which may be unknown, some of which may be unfamiliar, some of which we may have an inkling of, but which we have silenced, repressed, suppressed, hidden away, shut up, told to go away long ago. And so through voice, those parts can start to emerge. In voice movement therapy, we consider that everything is song. So we don't think that song is only my old man's a dustman, he wears a dustman's hat, he wears gold blimey trousers. We think that everything is song. So we consider that sighing is song. If I'm working with somebody and they're not ready yet to make sound with the voice, there may be some sighs in the space. And for me, that's the song. That's the song in that moment, the song. And so we use song and the notion of song to carry. We use it as the process, the expression, and then the container. I'm keeping an eye on the time as well, which is quite... And so we use the body, we use the breath, we use the voice, and initially we are in the improvisation of whatever sounds want to emerge. And then gradually we start to apply. There's always melody in sound. There's always melody in voice. And we start to apply the rhythm, melody, perhaps repetition, building upon what has gone before. I may be getting ahead of myself there, not sure. And so we're in this relationship of the inner and the outer, of the bringing to the outside something from the inside, bridging the conscious and the unconscious, and making something new. I feel that I should probably just move into the specifics of this. And so voice, okay. So voice has been used through time immemorial to express feelings. You know, it's part of every single culture. I'm in Greece at the moment, and voice is, in the past, voice was one of the areas which was used to express and deal with and transform grief, for example. All over Greece, most countries of the world had forms of lament, whereby rather than, you know, grief, death, loss being silent, then instead it was musicalized. And by being musicalized, it gave it a form and it gave it expression and it gave it a possibility of it being manageable. It gave it containment, it gave it music, it gave it melody, it gave it rhythm, and it gave people the possibility to join and to be fluid within that. Now, lament is a form that happened most all over the world. Nearly every country, as far as I'm aware, had forms of lament. And what a shame that it's been silenced mostly all over the world. I know that there's movement to bring it back, but it has been silenced, and so now we're left with a void. Now we're left with addiction and pain and trauma and separation and loss. Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh then. I have some notes which I have not looked at because it's impossible. I've just seen the note from somebody saying, yes, we need the lament. We absolutely do need the lament. And I've been doing a lot of work with lament over the last number of years, and it's such a beautiful thing whereby people, you know, we can let go of everything that we feel we have to keep all this stuff inside. And instead it carries us. I won't say any more about that. So now I'm trying to look at my notes. This work is improvisational initially, as people explore themselves vocally and journey into forgotten or discarded landscapes of the voice and self using breath, any sounds which emerge, which includes those freed from linguistically imposed restrictions, rhythm, melody, the body, and imagery. And through improvisation, it's possible to give expression to aspects of the self, including those previously unheard, unacknowledged, or unknown, and to facilitate the exploration of body, psyche, history, and identity, and to transform those areas of the self which have been unbearable or uncomfortable. By allowing and not censoring expression and creativity to emerge, people come to know and trust their own voices and selves and are able to sculpt emotions artistically into soundscapes. Jung spoke of translating emotions into images. And indeed, that's one of the ways that we work. You know, for people who have trauma, it may be a very small beginning or it may not. People often have images. For example, you know, my heart's a deserted landscape. This is something that somebody said. My heart is a deserted landscape where nothing can grow and it only withers. And she was speaking about a very great trauma in her life. And of course, such a beautiful way to express it. And so one of the ways that I worked in that particular situation is I said, you know, would you repeat that? And let's just start by extending some of your words, you know, start by extending, for example, the vowels within this, you know, my heart. I won't do it because it's different for her. And then also start by extending the peaks and the valleys of the voice. And so she began, you know, her heart, and then the sentence, my heart is a deserted landscape, began to expand and became sung. And so then she's singing, my heart is a deserted landscape. And as she continued to sing and the body was moving, and then new images began to unfold for her. Of course, there were tears, you know, Clarissa Pinkola Estes, a great Jungian who wrote Women Who Run With the World, she said, tears are basically lubrication. And there are some countries in the world who don't see a difference between crying and singing. Me, I always think that's really helpful, you know, because actually, are you crying? No, I'm singing, actually. And then that also relates to lament, you know. And again, you know, every time we're trying to hold the tears in, then we're having to make the body harder to keep it in. We're having to employ tension to keep it in. So, you know, let's come to our more liquid selves and let some of this stuff that we're having to contain all the time, let's let it flow. Let's let it be in the fluidity. It can be in the fluidity of breath and sound and tears and song. And once an image has begun, then images also start to flow. And so the particular person I was talking about, whose heart was a deserted landscape, she began to sing and she saw herself when she was very young, and she saw where the deserted landscape had come into being. And she was able to sing, first of all, the deserted landscape, then offer comfort to that young child who had been so traumatized. And as she sang to comfort the child, Then she noticed that just there in the distance were blooms starting to appear. So there were flowers starting to appear. And then she transitioned, and this is over a period of time, this isn't 5 minutes. And then she transitioned to, and now I see the red flowers, and now I see the red flowers, and they are blooming, and now they are blooming in my heart. And she sang these flowers which bloomed in her heart. And then the song she was singing, which had started in pain and grief and desperation, many, many tears, the song she was singing became this beautiful song of red flowers in her heart. And then she sang that, and it was really beautiful.
This is very beautiful, Christine. Thank you very much. And as we agreed, I let you know that you have 15 minutes to go. And there are a lot of questions, and actually some demand for maybe a little bit more experience. Can you give us something short to really feel what you're talking about? It's a lot of information.
Yeah. Okay. So let's do some sound. Then take some questions. So let's sound for 2.5 minutes. That's a good time. Okay. So we were in the heart and we were in the R. So we'll come back there. So we'll revisit. And I love the heart. I kind of think it's on a, I love that saying, with your heart in your mouth, you know, it means one other thing, but I kind of love this idea that the heart sings as well. So yeah, let's sing a little bit our hearts now. So you're all here at a trauma thing. So let's come and give ourselves some solace, because the voice, really important, is also for self-soothing, expression, self-soothing. So let's give ourselves a little bit of solace. And then again, I love to the hand on the heart. So I've got my hand on my heart. So bring your hand to your heart and take a deep breath. Take a deep breath. And take breath into the heart center here. And take breath into the heart center at the front and also the back. And let it expand. And let there be expansion also in your mouth. So if your mouth isn't open, open your mouth. Let your mouth fall open. Let your jaw fall open. Let the roof of your mouth lift. Let there be space inside your mouth. Maybe make your mouth as if you were gonna steam up a pair of glasses. And see if you can feel this breath. And see if you can make the breath audible so you can also hear the breath. I'm here by the sea, and the sea is just there, and the wind's starting to blow a little bit. So Maybe sing some sea or sing some wind. So let the waves of breath come into your body. Let the voice become like the sea. Let the body become like the sea, as if it's in you, as if you're in the sea, gently being moved by the sea. And if you wish, put more voice in. Whatever the voice is that you want. We are the sea, you know, because we cry salt water. We are salt water. It comes from our eyes. So be the sea. I don't want to interrupt anybody's process. And I have Kronos. Kronos is waiting at the door. And so Kronos makes me nervous. So, you know, you can play with that and play by yourselves, play with the liquidity of the body, play with the movement of the body, because we all have movements which are known and familiar to us. So imagine you're in the sea and the sea is moving you and you are flowing and floating and backwards and forwards and the rib cage moves and your breath and voice moves in it.
Wow, this is so powerful. Like, second time we do these short things and I'm like all zizzy and happy. Thank you. Okay, so if you're ready for some questions.
Hey, let's have some questions.
Okay, the one from Alana here is, I'm wondering if you have any advice for those moments in conversations when we feel choked up, feel like our voice is blocked or restricted, and unsure how to express what we want?
Yeah, what a great question. I could probably answer this in maybe about an hour and a half or something. Yeah, it would depend upon what the circumstance was, what the situation is. Globus hystericus, that's what it's known as, blocked words, like what are the blockages? You know, is it a blockage for the first time? Is it a blockage relating to a specific situation? Is it a blockage related to a specific event? Is it a blockage that's very known to you? A blockage that maybe you've had for a long time? And so obviously the thing that I'm going to say is, you know, come back into your body. Come back into your feet. You know, the feet are so important. Where are you? You know, come back. If you're sitting, feel where your bum is, you know, feel where your feet is. If you can put your hands to your feet, that's a good one. Sometimes it might be a useful one would be to, you know, hands are directly related also to the voice, to take your hands to your throat, to give compassion and care, to say it's all right. You know, it may be that fear is coming up, it may be that emotions, old emotions are coming up which want to make their way out, but because there has been a somatic patterning which has existed for a long time, then it blocks their emergence. In that case, it would be good to work with somebody, you know, to work with somebody who can help hold the space for you to do that, or who can help offer suggestions for you what to do in that particular time. Another one is you could stroke gently. You know, I'm a big fan of using the hands. You know, when we're babies, then we don't understand sound as different from touch, you know. The sonorous envelope is the container that the primary caregiver makes with the baby in sound, you know. So when we sing with babies, then that's known as a sonorous container. So I'm a big fan. Touch and sound, and see if you can use, because sound is vibration, see if you can use your sound to lessen some of the blockage. And very gently, I'm also a really big fan of kindness and compassion to self. You know, so often we're so hard, you know, you should be through this now, you know, get over it already. Don't get over it. Give it the time that it needs and be compassionate and careful. Treat yourself really as you would, as if you were, you know, a tender babe in arms. And that's another one you can do, actually. You can use your arms to rock. And rock and tell whatever part of yourself that is scared or unhappy or traumatized in that moment, it's okay, now I'm going to look after you. I'm here now. And you can sing that. You know, making the lullaby is so important. Some of us were sung to, many of us were not sung to. And so now we have to, you know, give ourselves what we weren't able to get in the initial days.
Well, thanks. And I guess this is partly answering another question very popular between our audience today. How do we start early with kids so that they got to know the value of the voice?
Sing with them and mirror them back to themselves. You know, if a kid is singing, don't go, oh yeah, that song actually doesn't go like this. It goes like this. Join with them in how they're singing it. You know, that's one of the ways that we learn confidence and trust in ourselves. How can we trust what comes out of our mouths? You know, for some of us, it takes a long time. You know, how can we trust? And we can build that trust by being a mirror, by reflecting back to somebody what they're doing. So if the kid is going, I went to the shop and it was closed. You don't go, yeah, it doesn't go, I went to the shop and it was closed. I just made that up, obviously. You go, you sing that with them. You don't go, no, I went to the shop and I bought 50 pigs, you know, whatever. You sing what they sing, you know, so let them know it's okay. Meet them in presence. You know, don't have the mobile phone there as well. Meet them in presence, in breath, in sound, in movement, and holding, you know. And the work that we do on ourselves, we can then share with others, you know. So if you have children or you're working with children, you are probably learning a huge amount and probably having opportunity to also address many things.
Thanks. You know, there are a lot of technical questions, like how long does it take to become a certified voice therapist? Where are you located? We will post your links, but maybe in a few words, what can you say?
Yeah, unfortunately, my website is not very updated. It's in process at the moment. And normally, the voice movement therapy training, it's about 500 on-site hours. And we do like movement, voice, Monday to Friday, from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m., like beginning 3 weeks at a time and then 4 weeks at a time for the final one. So we do 3 times 3 weeks, 1 times 4 week, and then people go and work with other people. They work with 3 clients for 20 sessions each under supervision, writing case notes, case study. They run a group for 8 weeks, case notes, case study under supervision. They write a thesis. Everybody, oh, really important thing I didn't say, we see everybody as a singer and a composer, because every single baby is composing themselves in song. Every baby does it, composes themselves in song. They're all jazz musicians. They're all avant-garde, you know, and that's everybody's birthright. And we are all singers. Anybody ever told you can't sing? They're wrong. You can sing. Everybody can. Out of tune? No, you're not. Let's just, you know, tune to the self. So, at the moment we had to, of course, stop partway through the current training, both in China and in Massachusetts. And we're doing stuff online, which we never thought we'd do. But, you know, and then we'll see what happens next year. We plan to come back and meet in person. And it's so important, you know, the being in person, so much information is conveyed in the space of togetherness. The body is telling its stories all the time. The voice is telling its stories all the time. And the whole history of the self is written in the voice.
Wow, fantastic. Thank you very much. This is one of the cases. when I don't want to stop, but the Cronus is here, as you said. So few announcements for our participants, and we will be back to you for your final top tip, how to be more embodied using your voice. So if you like that as much as I did, you can rewatch this session, recording of this session for 48 hours on our portal. The links will be on the chat. Of course, you can own this session and many others, great sessions and a lot of embodiment wisdom if you upgrade your profile, and you now have a chance to do it for only a 50% price. Till the end of the conference, we have this special offer for all of you. So please consider that. Also, if you cannot afford it or for some any other reason, you want to just support us in some other way, you can donate, and we will post a link for this option also in the chat. And of course, don't forget, but we are here all about connection and community. And there is a coffee break room where Christine, by the way, also invited to join after this. You can actually try this exercise or discuss any feelings about this session or something else. So just keep in touch and stay connected. Well, yes, and for this reason, also join our Facebook group. Right now, you're on the Trauma and Social Change channel, so the group is in the chat as well. I think this is it, and we are back to Christine for her final top tip.
Great. So one top tip, there are numbers of us around the world doing this work, not so many, but you can find us at www.iavmt.org. And so my top tip is keep on singing, sing, and sing where in the shower, as you walk down the street, as you're cutting the carrots, as you're doing whatever. It doesn't have to be good. It doesn't have to be anything other than it is. Just keep this voice flowing and let it make all the sorts of strange sounds that it wants to. You know, remember that baby who used to sing, and yeah, so sing as much as you can. And sing to your own heart, and then sing for the hearts of the world, because gosh, we need it. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. This is really powerful, really inspiring. Lots of people get excited. You will be able also to read through the chat, Christine, I mean. Thank you, everybody. See you around for the rest of the Embodiment Conference.
How do I get in the coffee room?
Yep.
Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Kim. How do I get to the coffee room?
Oh, okay. Harmony, can you please post the link one more time here?
Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Harmony. And thank you, Embodiment Conference. And thank you all who came. And I wish you well.